Okay, so I will talk about a new approach to perform perturbative calculations. And this is work done in collaboration with Kirill Melnikov and Frank Petriello. So this is practically a method to compute divergent integrals in dimensional regularization, and by that I mean phase-space integrals or loop integrals. And the method is based on very simple mathematics, and actually we practically found all of these simple tricks to exist before us in the literature. And some of them were developed even when I was 2 years old or 3 years old. Some others were very systematically developed later on by people like Binoth and Heinrich, where they applied these techniques to calculate inclusive phase space integrals and loop integrations in a very systematic manner. So what I will do in my talk is to study these methods and try to extend them a bit further for exclusive phase space integrations. And I will give an example in a physical application, which is the E plus E minus to two jets cross section through next-to-next learning order in QCD. The example is simple, but I think it's very realistic because it can test all possible complications that one finds at next-to-next learning order calculations or even beyond. And besides the simplicity, it's still a kind of state-of-the-art calculation since it is practically the first known fully differential cross-section at this order in perturbation theory. So let me go ahead and show the basic elements that come into this perturbative calculation. At tree level, we just have a diagram where a very simple tree diagram where a virtual photon coming from the annihilation of E plus E minus decays into a QQ bar pair. At that next leading order, we have to add corrections of that. And on the left diagram, we have a loop correction. And on the right diagram, we have to consider real emission. And of course, at next learning order, we get a more complicated pattern. So we get two loop corrections, mixed loop and real radiation corrections, and double real radiation corrections. So in my talk, I will mainly focus on this type of diagram or that one a bit. And we will see how we can also do the other types of diagrams with what other people have known already or some more improvements. So let's see. Let me review a bit how we would do the next learning order calculation. And I will start by saying how people in the past have been doing this calculation. The loop correction is fairly easy to do. I don't want to say anything about it. The only thing that we have to know is that it is divergent. And we see one over epsilon square poles and one over epsilon poles plus a finite part. And of course, this result on its own, it does not make any sense. One has to combine the real radiation corrections together in order to get something meaningful. So what we have to do is to take the phase space integral over the matrix elements for producing a quark, an anti-quark, and a gluon, and integrate over the moment of the final state particles. Now, a trivial thing that everybody does is that since the matrix elements here are written explicitly in terms of invariant masses, it's customary to change the measure of the phase space integration and rewrite it in terms of invariant masses. So when this is done, what we pick up is a Jacobian which has an epsilon exponent here, which comes from the fact that this integration is d-dimensional. And epsilon is the d equals 4 minus 2 epsilon of dimensional regularization. So, and the matrix elements are exactly as they were before. We only changed the Jacobian. But what we observe is that they are singular. These matrix elements get denominators that they can go to zero. And of course, if you perform the integral completely, you know that the epsilon poles from the Jacobian will come to rescue you and give you one over epsilon poles that they will cancel the virtual part. So this is a task that we have to do, to compute these phase space integrals. But there is one point which is left over. We must combine this phase space integral together with the virtual correction in a meaningful way. And the meaningful way is by looking at what we really measure at the detector. We don't measure quarks and gluons, we measure jets. So what we have to do is to introduce a function inside the phase space integral, which we call jet function, which is in terms of invariant masses, and its purpose is exactly to tell you when you have a 2Z configuration or a 3Z configuration. And it can be a bunch of theta functions that they take conditions like that one if all invariant masses are bigger than a certain minimum, then it's a 3Z configuration, or otherwise the 2Z configuration, or even a more complicated algorithm, that it tells you exactly that. And this Z function can also have more usages. You can use it in more ways to reflect exactly what's going on in your experiment. So you can use it in order to impose cuts in the detector. The detector does not cover everything in the phase space. So if you want to take into account cuts, this is the place that you are going to put it, in this J function. And also, if you want to look at a specific observable, like energies of particles, pseudorapidities, etc., etc., this is again the place that you want to put these constraints. So practically, from the mathematics point of view, this function cannot be treated as something very well known. You only specify it at the very late stage when you want to see what your experiment requires. But for all analytical computations, it's very difficult to describe it in a nice way. So the task is very, very difficult. You have to perform an integral which you don't know every part of the integrand. However, this task is solved at NLO in a very good way. So what people have been done, and I only present here one method of all, what have been done is to say, okay, this is a divergent integral, so let me remove the most divergent part of it. And when they do that, what it remains is, of course, by definition, finite. The good thing about it is that when you remove this part, which is the most divergent, now the matrix elements simplify in a very nice way. This F represents the matrix elements. And the Z function is not defined except than one point. So practically, the Z function becomes a constant for the integration. And therefore, since all of this object here is a simple object, you can perform this integration over the singular part explicitly and expose this 1 over epsilon power. So this is very nice. And people, as you heard earlier in previous talks, would like to do the same thing at Neptune excluding order. And I think it has very good chances to work, and already there has been a remarkable progress on that field. So the reasons to attempt this approach again is that, again, you can remove something. Oh, one thing that I forgot to say is that the matrix elements in the singular limits take a universal form. So once you extracted them for one process, you know them for all. So the main objective is to extract these subtraction terms once and for all, calculate the poles once and for all, and then do QCD just by typing in some C code that says what is the matrix element in the non-singular limits. Now, we have, though, some reasons to believe that another approach might be very productive, too. And the reason is that in order to find these subtraction terms at Neptune excluding order, this is a very hard thing. People have spent a lot of time on that. There is progress, but still, it is a very big task. And once they are found, it's very hard to integrate them. And even if you did so for aesthetical purposes, it's also a bit annoying because you would like to take this integral and be able to calculate it directly without looking at the physics. And this is only aesthetical, but for some people, it might be important. So what we'll try to do is to avoid this procedure and review these calculations. So our first attempt is to try to make all of these integrations to take a standard form. And what it makes them not to have a standard form is that the phase space usually does not have nice boundaries. And at next leading order, we only have a condition saying that the three invariant masses for the quark gluon, anti-quark gluon, and the QQ bar pair, they add up to the mass of the decaying photon. And it's simple, but at next to leading order, the boundary is much harder. So one standard thing that we always try to do is to transform the boundaries in order to range from as simple as an integral from 0 to 1. And here it's very easy to do that. We find variables for the quark-gluon biomass, which takes a lambda 1 fraction of the total energy. Then the anti-quark gluon takes a lambda 2 fraction of whatever it was left, and the QQ bar in biomass can be extracted from just using this condition upstairs. And when we do that, we of course change the boundaries to go from 0 to 1. And again, what we also did is that we did not change very much the structure of the infrared poles. We again have coefficients down here. We have denominators down here that they are singular. And we also did not lose much information about the Z function, because we have entries with where the quark-gluon biomass is here, but it's represented by the lambda variable. And also the anti-quark-gluon biomass is here again, and the QQ bar is here. So we practically have the same integral rewritten in a nicer form. And again, I will not do anything fancy, but I will resort to a subtraction in order to calculate this integral. These lambda integrations can be made finite if we subtract the more singular part. And what it remains is an epsilon pole. Now, the benefit is that since I have brought every boundary from 0 to 1, I can use a very powerful language to systematize these subtractions. And the language is the language of class distributions. If I expand this last term on the right side in epsilon, and I just see what happened to the integral, I can read off this identity, that whenever I have patterns of a variable to the minus 1 plus an epsilon power, then this can be expanded in terms of delta functions and plus distributions. And in the physical case that I was showing, we have two lambda variables, lambda 1 and lambda 2, so we can again do the same trick for both of them. And just by using this identity, I immediately get the cross-section. It has 1 over epsilon square poles with delta functions on the top, 1 over epsilon poles with some delta functions and plus distributions, and a finite part which has plus distributions, delta functions, and normal integrable things. And this is very nice, because this is exactly the language that I want to have in order to multiply my integrand with whatever I want. I think this is why the plus distributions, delta functions have been developed at the first place. And the flexibility that it provides is that only at the end, when I have to implement everything in Fortran, I need to specify this function. So it's a very flexible tool to give it to an experimentalist. Now, let me look a bit if we have done everything correctly. So we should check this result. And the first thing to check is the poles. And you see that at the 1 over epsilon square part, at the 1 over epsilon square part, we have two delta functions, delta lambda 1 and delta lambda 2. And those delta functions, what they do is that they set the quark-gluon biomass to 0 and the anti-quark-gluon biomass to 0, and the QQ bar to be 1. So this means that we have a soft gluon, and this is what we expected. The deepest pole comes from soft gluon radiation. And if we go to at the 1 over epsilon part, we only have one delta function specifying to 0 one of the two invariant masses. And this corresponds to a collinear radiation. And of course, both these configurations are two Z configurations. So when they are added up together with the virtual part, then they cancel. And of course, we have tested this expression in many other ways, like reproducing the very well-known alpha strong over pi and other things, and many Z observables. So this is a very easy way to obtain this result. And given the success at this level, we wanted to go a bit further and see what happens at next learning order. And things get a bit more complicated because we have some extra radiation here. So instead of three invariant masses to work with, we have six now, five of them independent. And we have to do some more work in order to find variables that they range from 0 to 1 and describe the phase space, but it's fairly straightforward how to do it. And the hope is that once we do this work and write everything in terms of these variables that range from 0 to 1, we will have a factorized formula that we can extract the divergences just using this identity here. But this is not really what it happens. So let me give you a few more details. One nice thing that it happens is that the measure of the phase space factorizes completely. And if I did not have any matrix elements or a Z function, then this result would be just gamma functions, as one expects. But in physical applications, we do have matrix elements, and we do have Z functions. And let's look at the terms in the matrix elements. Some of them are factorized, like this one, or that one. But there are others, like, for example, when you have an invariant mass in the denominator of three particles, that they don't really factorize. You have a sum of two terms that they can go together to the zero value. So if this object exists in the denominator, this can go to, this can explode the integrand by having two variables going at the same time to zero. So this is an overlapping divergence. And the machinery how to disentangle this overlapping divergences has been publicly known for many years now, and it has been advertised a lot by Gudrun in their previous works. And we were very happy that it existed and we used it. So here is a simple example of this this trick of disentangling the overlapping divergences can be found. So we have an integral with just two terms that we need to integrate, and they both can go to zero. Now, on the top, the singularities are not factorized. However, if we divided the integration region in two regions, in one in which one of the two variables is always bigger than the other, then what we see is that the singularity is factorized. So we have one integral here where the x variable is bigger than y, and of course we have the other integral covering the rest of the phase space. And if we remap back everything from 0 to 1 in this integral, we see that the overlapping divergence in this sector is now factorized in terms of only one variable, and the rest is finite. And of course here, nothing stops me from applying this expansion in terms of delta functions and plus distributions. However, there is one more kind of singularities that we have to deal with. And these are not singularities at 0 or 1, meaning at the endpoint of the integration. We find singularities in a line of points inside the integration regions. And this appears in one of the invariant masses, which in our numbering is S13. So I have not told you what this invariant mass has, a minimum value and a maximum value. And let's take the case where lambda 5 here is 0, so we have the minimum value for this invariant mass, and it appears in the denominator. The explicit form that it takes is a difference of two positive terms. So this means that this object can explode inside the integration region when, for example, lambda 4 takes a specific value, which solves this equation to be 0. And this, of course, does not produce an epsilon divergence, but it produces a numerical instability. So the solution to this problem is to somehow to split the integration again from one region, from 0 to this special point in the lambda 4 integration where this thing is negative, and from lambda 4 singular to 1 where this thing is positive. So in these two new sectors, everything is well-defined in terms of the sign of the denominators. And we can again apply the usual tricks with sector decompositions for whatever leftover overlapping divergences we had. So I will not really bother you with this kind of singularities, but it has some implications for other cases that I will mention at the end. So let me summarize the algorithm that one has to use in practice. So it's very simple. You have to take the phase space integral and find new variables that they have very simple boundaries from 0 to 1. And then whatever singularities in the middle of the phase space region exist, you have to move them at the boundaries by splitting the integration region. And at this point, all the singularities will be overlapping at the endpoints of the integration. And for that, we use the technique of sector decomposition. And finally, in order to gain flexibility to multiply the integrand with whatever z function we want, we expand in terms of plus distributions. And of course, this epsilon expansion, the coefficients of the epsilon expansion can be computed numerically with a Vegas integration or any other numerical integration technique that's appropriate. And we have done that for the real part, but of course we also have to do the same thing for, we have to calculate the real virtual and the virtual part. These are easy to calculate with usual techniques, but let me make this remark that also Goodwin made earlier, that Feynman parameters have already simple boundaries. And in loop integrals, you also find overlapping singularities. So it is very easy to merge phase space integrations and loop integrations together by just transforming these Feynman parameters in terms of nice variables that they range from 0 to 1. So the message here is that everything can be dealt with the same techniques if somebody wishes to. And we did compute the z cross section, the two z cross section at next excluding order. And here I have a specific coefficient for the next excluding order coefficient for a specific z algorithm, where the separation variable is 0.1 for the jth algorithm. And you see that we have poles here that they come out of our expansion, but they have cancelled within numerical accuracy errors. And the final result agrees with what one expects by knowing the total cross-section and the 3z cross-section from NLO programs. And of course, it does not really take many resources to do this calculation. We found it very amazingly easy to implement it in the computer. We did not expect that it would be so nice. And since we have implemented the extraction of the poles in such a way that we can multiply with anything that we like, it's very easy to produce differential distributions, to make an event generator if we wish to. So as an example, what I would present here is the maximum energy distribution of the two jets. And at leading order, this is a very boring distribution because it is half and half of the energy split between the two jets. But at next leading order and at next to next leading order, then one or two of the two jets can become massive. So this distribution gets a real shape. And here is the result. Sorry if you cannot, the plot is very visible, but okay, at leading order we only have the first bin that is depopulated because we only have a value at half that can occur physically. At next leading order we get this result here, the blue band. And at next leading order, we get this one. So I don't really want to make any physics out of that. I just wanted to show you that this is a very flexible implementation in order to produce distributions if you wanted to. And now I would like to come back to the point that I discussed before and I bothered you with the singularities in the middle of the phase space. This is not, I mean, we found them in the phase space. However, this is not the only place that they occur. They also occur in loop integrals. And before, what I had is that first, I had two terms. Okay, let me give an example here. So here the example that I take is the one loop box in a 2-to-2 scattering situation where you know that the S Mandelson variable is positive and the T Mandelson variable is negative. So again, we find two competing terms. And this offset can go to zero. Now, this is not protected by an absolute value as it was in the phase space. So what it will do is that in one side it will be positive and in the other side it will be negative. And this will generate an imaginary part. And what usually people do is that they first extract all the infinite divergences and then they try to find the imaginary part. However, this is a line singularity as before. So what one can do is to split one of the integration variables and in each one of the two sectors, the sign of this object is definite. And indeed, if we do that here, we get two integrals that they are very easy to compute with sector decomposition, and no singularities occur in the middle of the phase space region. And the offending sign that produced the imaginary part is factorized outside. So to produce what is the explicit expression in the Minkowski region is absolutely trivial from that one. And this brings me to my conclusions. I have presented a method which I think can be applied for any type of calculations in fixed order perturbation theory. And it is based on very simple tricks, mathematical tricks. One has first to systematically factorize the singularities on the integrand by splitting the integrand in sectors. And then once the singularities are factorized, we can extract them by expanding in plus distributions. And at the end, the coefficients of the expansion can be evaluated numerically. So this is a mathematical procedure, and it appears that loop integrals, phase space integrals, or other integrals, like convolution integrals in hadron-hadron scattering, where you have to remove the columnar state singularities, they can be put in this nice form. And therefore, it's a very flexible tool. We have already computed the first fully differential cross-section at next-to-next-to-next order with this method. And we believe it's a very powerful method, and it will probably give many more results in the future. Thank you.
In the real integrations, you are finding some singularities that are inside of this integration box. Mm-hmm. Could you explain physically where they come from, or that's like two particles are being collinear to each other, or what's it from?
They are not collinear or soft. They are, well, they correspond to specific angles if in the center of mass frame. They should not really be there. They are thresholds, but they are kind of protected, right? So, yeah, they are three graphs. Well, the honest answer is that I did not really bother to see in what specific angles they correspond, but I think they correspond to some angle in one of the graphs to be something like 30 or 60 and something in one plane. But I didn't bother very much about it. As long as I was able to remove it, I was happy to go along with that.
Cosine jumps from, say, 1 to minus 1, this causes this pseudo threshold.
Yeah, I guess the question is why it jumps, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Any other questions?
Okay, thank you.